BBC News.
This is BBC Radio 4. Now the first part of Virginia Woolf's classic novel Mrs. Dalloway, dramatised by Micheline Wandor. Lives and histories interweave on the streets of London as Clarissa Dalloway makes the final preparations for an important party.
A June morning in London. Soft, blue-grey air. I build my London around me, creating it every moment afresh. I am at peace in the midst of carriages and motor cars, omnibuses and vans. I am at ease among the triumph and the jingle, the shops and parks. In this moment of summer, there is a solemnity, a suspense, a hushed moment just before Big Ben strikes. Big Ben strikes on a June morning in London. The leaden circles dissolve in the air.
Richard?
Yes, Clarissa?
I want to ask you something.
What, my dear?
Do you think we should have ices?
For breakfast?
No. Shall we have ices tonight?
Tonight? Well, why not? Yes. By all means, let us have ices.
Everything else is ordered. Chairs, flowers, cloakroom tickets.
Cloakroom tickets?
The party, Richard. My party. I was thinking of lemon and vanilla.
Lemon and vanilla cloakroom tickets.
Oh, really? Ices. Lemon and vanilla ices.
Mother, have you seen my green jacket?
No, of course not. I'll ask Lucy to find it.
Morning, Elizabeth.
Toast?
No, thank you. I'm late. I'm meeting Miss Kilman. We're going to the Army and Navy stores.
Good heavens. I don't understand why you spend so much time with her.
Oh, Mother. Miss Kilman knows so much about history. She's wonderfully enthusiastic. Inspiring, even.
I believe she does some university extension lecturing.
And she's very devout. I admire her for that.
In my experience, religious ecstasy makes people callous.
Well, Miss Kilman believes in causes. Surely you approve of that.
I'm sure she is a paragon of compassion. But she doesn't care in the least how she dresses. She inflicts positive torture with that green Macintosh coat.
It's the only coat she owns.
Exactly. She's never in the room for 5 minutes without making you feel her superiority. And your inferiority. How poor she is, how rich you are, how she lives in a slum without a cushion or a bed.
Of course she has a bed.
Well, a rug or whatever it might be. Her soul is rusted with grievances.
Why do you hate her so much?
It isn't her one hates, but the idea of her. She is one of those spectres with whom one battles during the night.
I have to buy some more flowers. You can help me choose. And I must have a new pair of gloves. Why not come shopping with me? Another day, Mother. I must go. Goodbye, Pa. Mm.
I wish she was more graceful, more ladylike.
Elizabeth is lovely just as she is.
A June morning in London. Another day with carriages, motor cars, omnibuses. So much noise, so many people. I wish I could shout for help so loudly that my sisters will hear me and come from Milan to London to be with me.
Rezia, what are you looking at?
Just the street, Septimus. Come and see, it's a beautiful day.
Close the window, please.
I wonder if it's hot in Milan.
Are we going to Milan?
Not today. We have an appointment to see Dr. Holmes today, remember?
Yes, I remember.
He likes you. Then this afternoon we're going to see Sir William Bradshaw.
Do I know him?
No.
Why are we going to see another doctor?
Just to get a second opinion. Two appointments in one day. We'll be busy.
What are you doing now?
I'm looking for my new hat.
What do you think?
Why do you need a hat if we're going to see a doctor?
Because you can tell everything about a woman by the hat she wears. I want to wear my new hat. Is that funny? Good. I'm glad it's funny. Shall we go for a walk in Regent's Park?
Yes. I'd like a walk.
When you are quite well, Septimus, we shall go back to Italy and walk in the parks in Milan. Come.
White houses. Streets. Crowded every evening with people walking, laughing out loud. I miss Milan. I feel as if I am fading in London, like the last sparks of a rocket surrendering to the night.
What time will you be home for luncheon, Richard?
I'm lunching with Lady Bruton today.
Oh, dear, today of all days. Could you ask her to invite us another day?
Well, actually, Clarissa...
I see. I'm not invited.
It's a business luncheon, my dear. You would be terribly bored. You don't mind, do you?
Yeah, of course I don't mind.
I'm pleased to hear it. You have no need to be jealous of one lunch with Lady Bruton.
Jealousy, Richard, is vulgar. Millicent Bruton may give amusing lunch parties, but she shows the passage of time on her face.
Clarissa.
Well, last time I saw her, I thought how much she had aged. Well, I never.
What is it?
Peter Walsh. He's on his way back from India. You remember Peter, don't you?
How could I forget the man who followed you round like a mournful spaniel every summer? He was always at Boughton.
Well, I do believe you are still jealous of him. Peter always said I would marry a prime minister and stand at the top of a staircase.
I am never jealous of dull people. And he was wrong about my becoming prime minister. Though we do indeed have a number of staircases, and you often stand at the top of them. He was madly in love with you, wasn't he?
Yes, that's quite true. But I didn't marry him, Richard. I married you.
You showed great taste. You have a gift for people.
I do. I understand people by instinct. But half the time I do things in order to make other people think this or that of me. I want people to be pleased when I walk into a room.
Well, there you are. That's your special gift.
Even so, if I could have my life all over again, I think I would want to be interested in politics, like a man.
Why would you want to be interested in politics?
Oh, I don't know. Fear no more the heat of the sun.
We're hardly into June.
Fear no more the heat of the sun is Shakespeare. Oh, I expect that's why I married you, because you'd never read Shakespeare.
And I still haven't. No decent man ought to read Shakespeare's sonnets. It's like listening at keyholes. Oh, good Lord, I must be off. Goodbye, my dear. Bye, Lucy.
Goodbye, sir. Shall I clear breakfast, madam?
Please. What time are the men coming?
About 11.
Well, make sure they don't scratch the furniture or mark the wallpaper.
Mm.
Oh, and could you find Miss Elizabeth's green jacket?
Yes, madam.
I must go. Oh, I shall need you later to help with the flowers and arrange the drawing room.
Yes, madam.
Still the same furniture in the hotel. Shabby white tablecloths.
Your post, Mr. Walsh.
Thank you, Stevens.
Red leather chairs and sofas.
It's good to see you again, sir.
And you, Stevens.
Same plants. Spiked, tired leaves. Well, well. Sally Seaton.
Darling Peter, I have been the most frightfully bad correspondent. But I'm coming up to London for Clarissa's party this evening, and I hope I shall see you.
Clarissa at Boughton. Standing on the top of the hill, above the River Severn. Her hands clapped to her hair, her cloak blowing out. Clarissa. Kneeling down and boiling a kettle on a little fire. Smoke blowing in our faces.
How about meeting me for tea before the party? By the Red Pillar Box, opposite the British Museum. At 3 o'clock.
Boughton in the dusk. Walking through stubble fields. Clarissa, always striding ahead. Finding a flower, laughing. Talking about poetry, people, politics.
I'm looking forward so much to seeing you again. Yours, etc. Sally.
air at Boughton was always calmer and more still than in London. Here, in Westminster, the air is chill and sharp, like the kiss of a wave. What a lark. What a plunge. Here I am, Mrs. Dalloway. Not even Clarissa Dalloway. Mrs. Richard Dalloway. I am invisible, unseen, unknown. There's no more marrying, no more having children. The soft mesh of the grey-blue morning unwinds in the streets, whirling young men and laughing young girls in their transparent muslins float along the pavements. And Peter Walsh is coming home from India.
Look! Retzia! Streamers!
Where?
Up there, on the trees.
Those aren't streamers. It's just the branches.
Hold my hand. I might fall into the flames.
It's a street, Septimus. With people, cars, children. The world is beautiful today.
London is still as splendid as ever. Doctors, men of business, capable women.
Morning.
Punctual, alert, wholly admirable. Good fellows to whom one would entrust one's life. Companions in the art of living who would see one through. There are moments when civilization of this sort is as dear to me as a personal possession.
Bond Street. Hat shops. A roll of tweed in the tailor's shop where my father bought his suits for 50 years. A string of pearls in the jeweler's window. Salmon on an ice block in the fishmonger's. Gloves. Oh, I must buy gloves. Here in the streets of London, on the ebb and flow of things, here I survive.
Clarissa!
Why, you Whitbread of all people.
What a pleasure to run into you. And looking so well.
I didn't know the admirable Hugh Whitbread shopped in Bond Street. What have you bought?
What?
Oh, that's my dispatch box. I'm on my way to the office.
And you? Where are you off to?
Final shopping for the party tonight. Have you and Evelyn come up for this evening?
Well, yes and no. For your party and not for your party.
Dear old Hugh. So shy. Like a brother.
We're here to see the doctors again.
I am sorry. What is it this time?
Evelyn is a little out of sorts, I'm afraid.
Oh, dear.
One would rather die than speak honestly to one's brother.
Look, I should very much like to buy something for her. What shall it be?
I don't know. Something to read, some sort of book, perhaps. I'll leave it up to you.
Oh, very well. What about Cranford? If only people had that sort of humour now. Yes, I think Evelyn would appreciate Cranford.
It's a frightful bore, you know. Mothers come up to London to see pictures, to go to the opera, to take their daughters out. We come up to see doctors. That is how it is.
Oh, what a nuisance. One does age, though.
You never age, Clarissa.
Oh, sweet of you to say so. Even if Evelyn is indisposed, you will still come to my party, won't you?
Wouldn't miss it for the world. Evelyn will insist on my going.
Oh, Richard will be so pleased to see you.
Actually, I shall see old Richard before tonight. We're both lunching at Millicent Bruton's.
Ah. Is Evelyn invited to luncheon?
Good Lord, no. It's business and politics.
Well, actually, it is a relief not to be invited. One is so busy. I have flowers to see to.
Flowers? What a good idea. Perhaps I should take flowers to Millicent. What do you think about carnations?
I have no idea what Millicent likes. Don't be late tonight, Hugh. I must dash. Bye.
Goodbye, Clarissa.
How old is Evelyn now? About my age? 52? Oh, it's probably that. Well, gloves and flowers. Flowers and gloves.
A splendid morning. Like the pulse of a perfect heart. Regent's Park in the sun. A long, straight walk going on forever. London is enchanting. The softness, the distances, the greenness, the civilization. Why does my childhood keep coming back to me? A leaf brings it back in an instant.
Retzia, you must write down everything.
I'll write it down when we get home, Carol. You know I always do.
Write it on the sky.
If I was tall enough, I would.
I like it here. High on the back of the world.
Shall we look in the shop windows?
What's that music?
It's a pipe. What do you call it? A penny whistle. Look, over there, across the road.
It rises in smooth columns. I never knew you could see music.
Good morning, madam. May I help you?
Yes, I'd like to see some white gloves. They must come above the elbow.
Certainly. Would you like to try these, madam?
Oh, these are grey.
They are actually off-white. Do try them. They should be long enough for you.
Oh, perhaps you're right.
Madam's hands are so slender. The gloves will slide easily over the rings. There. What do you think?
Oh, no, they won't do. They hardly come to my elbows. I need at least another inch.
Do look at them in the daylight, by the door.
How interesting. Perhaps you're right after all. They might do. Do you remember before the war you sold gloves with pearl buttons?
French gloves, madam.
Yeah, I think they were French.
I'm afraid we don't stock them anymore.
Well, I'll take this pair then.
Thank you, madam. Shall I wrap them for you?
Yes, please. I'll collect them later.
An aeroplane. Swooping like a dancer. Like a seagull over London. So, flowers. Roses, like frilled linen clean from the laundry. Dark and prim red carnations hold their heads up next to sweet peas spreading in their bowls as if it is the evening and girls in muslin frocks have come out on a summer day.
Good morning, Mrs. Dalloway. Isn't it a lovely day?
Good morning, Miss Pym. It is indeed.
The perfume of a moment between 6 and 7 in the evening, when every flower glows.
Your flowers are ready. We can deliver them any time this afternoon.
Thank you.
Evening in the garden. Boughton. My lovely Boughton.
Oh, I love the scent in here. What are your favourites?
Well, the sweet peas are especially beautiful at the moment.
Oh, so they are. I'll carry a bunch of sweet peas with me now, if I may.
Certainly, Mrs. Dalloway.
Good heavens, what on earth was that?
Those motor cars are far too loud.
What's happened?
Oh, my Lord. Oh, right. Come on, the cab. You're all right.
Come on. Excuse me, is there anything I can do? Are you hurt, sir?
I don't think so, madam. Come, Septimus, you must get up.
Why is everything stopped?
You tripped over, that is all.
Are you quite sure you're all right?
Yes, yes, we are fine, thank you. My husband was startled by the car.
He's quite pale.
Why are they looking at me?
No one is looking at you. Everyone is looking at the motor car.
Please, forgive me for asking. Are you Italian?
Yes, I am. I'm afraid my accent is not always good.
Oh, no, no, it is very good. Would you like these flowers? Perhaps they will cheer your husband. I love sweet peas.
I can't possibly take them.
Oh, I can easily buy more. I would like you to have them, really.
Thank you. They are beautiful. Thank you so much. Mille grazie.
The world has raised its whip. Where will it descend?
Are you enjoying London?
Oh, very much.
Have you seen Buckingham Palace, where the King and Queen live?
Not yet. I hope my husband will take me one day.
Retzia, that aeroplane. It's Evans.
Thank you so much for your help, madam. Come along, Septimus.
An aeroplane, swooping like a dancer. Flying over the countryside.
I say, Clarissa. I want to tell you something.
What is it, Richard?
It's a secret.
Over the sea. Over London.
Oh, Peter, look. Clarissa is blushing.
Sally Seton. Clarissa.
What is she laughing at?
Boughton.
Peter, may I introduce my new friend, Mr. Wickham?
Oh. Do you know, I never knew your surname, Mr. Wickham. How do you do?
He's not really called Wickham, silly.
But you just said he is.
Don't you remember? Wickham was the dashing young soldier in Pride and Prejudice. Jane Austen, you know.
Yes, actually, I do know.
I'm no soldier, Clarissa. Far from it.
Ah, but you are very dashing, Mr. Wickham.
I'm not at all dashing.
I walk very slowly.
Flattering, though, to be compared to a soldier, don't you think?
I don't know. Actually, Peter, my name is Dalloway.
Sally Season, behave. Richard, from now on, I shall call you Wickham Dalloway. Or shall it be Dalloway Wickham?
No, no, no. I think it must be my name is Dalloway. How do you do? My name is Dalloway.
The leaden circles of Big Ben dissolving in the air. Heaven only knows why one loves London so. Making it, building it, tumbling it, creating it every moment in other people's eyes, in the swing, tramp and trudge, in the bellow and the uproar. The carriages, motor cars, omnibuses, vans, sandwich men shuffling and swinging, brass bands, barrel organs. The triumph and the jingle and the strange high singing of an aeroplane over London. This is what I love. I know it must end. While it is here, I love it all.
Look, Septimus, now there are letters in the sky. They're trailing from the aeroplane.
Tell them to stop.
Let's sit down. Is this bench taken, sir?
No, no, please. There's plenty of room.
It's remarkable, isn't it? Those letters.
What do they say? I can't work it out.
T-O... It's... I think they must be advertising toffee.
K-R-E... What does that spell?
It's Cremo. That must be the name of the toffee. You mustn't talk to strangers, Rezia. Your voice has thrown the trees into the air. Now the leaves are burning.
Is a gentleman ill, my dear?
I don't want to go mad.
My darling, you are not going mad.
But the trees are alive.
Of course they are. Trees and flowers grow, just like people.
The leaves are in my body. Sparrows, fluttering, rising, falling in jagged fountains. I must tell you something, sir. It's a secret.
I can keep a secret.
Listen, I'm thinking of killing myself.
I do apologize, sir.
There is no need to apologize.
You are not going to kill yourself, Septimus.
How much longer can I stand this?
He fought in the war, you see.
Loving someone is so lonely.
You're not a coward, Septimus. You are brave.
Do you think I am mad, sir?
Certainly not. You seem to be preoccupied, thinking about things, that's all.
There. This gentleman does not think I am mad. There is a God.
Indeed. God is always there. Are you from Italy?
Yes, I am from Milan.
I've just returned from India.
Oh, do you live there?
I've been there for the past 5 years. My family is Anglo-Indian. They've always been in colonial administration, so I simply followed in their footsteps. Which is a little odd, since I rather dislike empire and the army and all that.
I don't think Evans has ever been to India.
Sir, I should explain.
Evans is a great friend.
He was a great friend to Septimus. You were very lucky to have such a friend.
Were?
He was killed, my darling, in the war, remember?
I had friends who were killed in the war.
But Evans is there. I can see him behind those railings.
He is not my Septimus anymore. He says hard, cruel, strange things.
We both love coming to Regent's Park.
Have you visited Hampton Court? The flowers there are wonderful, red and yellow, like floating lamps. At least that's how I remember it. May not be the same. After all, London is different now in some ways.
How? Oh.
People look more content somehow, freer.
It's time to go, Rezia.
Septimus, where are you going?
Evans, you are being stupid.
Don't worry, Rezia. I am perfectly rational. People are wicked. They make up lies. I know how their minds work. I know the meaning of the world.
Thank you for talking to us, Mr...
Walsh. Peter Walsh.
I am Lucrezia. My husband is Septimus Warren Smith.
Well, goodbye. Best of luck to you both. Goodbye, Evans.
Wait for me, Septimus.
Lucy! Lucy!
They've nearly finished, Mrs. Dalloway.
Careful!
Sorry, ma'am.
Please watch what you're doing with them doors.
Sorry, ma'am.
Is everything all right?
Oh, yes, madam. Sorry I had to raise me voice to the men. It's the only way I can make them take notice.
Well, that's quite understandable. Has anyone telephoned?
Oh, yes, madam. There's a message for you.
Thank you. Would you take these gloves upstairs and put the sweet peas in water? I'll have them in my bedroom. The rest of the flowers will be delivered later.
Very well, madam. Oh, we've cleaned all the silver for the party. The giant candlesticks came up a treat.
Thank you, Lucy.
My dear Clarissa, I am so looking forward to your party this evening.
Sally Seaton. A moment like this is a bud on the tree of life. Darling, lovely Sally Seaton.
Oh, good heavens. Lucy! Someone's left the landing window open.
I'm sorry, madam. I'll come up and close it. Have you decided what you're going to wear tonight, madam?
Come and help me choose.
It's hard to think the house will be full of people in no time. They'll all talk like this.
Oh, and howdy-do. And where you been of recent times?
Oh, that's rather good, Lucy. You have quite a gift.
I know, madam. Ladies and gentlemen, I can imitate them all.
Now then.
Oh, madam, how can you possibly choose?
I shall wear... How about this one?
Perfect.
Oh, good. Could you iron it?
Certainly.
Oh, thank you. Oh, by the way, have you found Elizabeth's jacket?
Yes, it's hanging in her room.
I wore this dress at Hatfield and at Buckingham Palace.
Oh, dear. The hem is torn, look. On the one side.
Torn? Where? Oh, yes.
How could that have happened?
Oh, someone must have trodden on it at the embassy party last month.
Shall I mend it, madam?
Oh, no. You have far too much to do. I'll mend it myself. Take my sewing things into the drawing room.
You will look like a queen, Mrs. Dalloway.
Thank you, Lucy. What on earth was that?
I'll go and see.
May I help you?
Mr. Septimus Warren Smith to see Dr. Holmes, please.
Certainly. Do come in. Please take a seat in the waiting room, first door on the right.
Thank you.
Green silk folds. The needle draws the silk smoothly to a gentle pause. Fear no more, says the heart. As the summer's day's waves collect, overbalance, and fall. The body listens to the wave breaking.
Mrs. Dalloway, you have a visitor. Will you see him?
It's all right. Clarissa, may I come in?
What? Peter Walsh. Good heavens. Thank you, Lucy.
Mum?
What a surprise.
I wrote to you. I said I was coming back. Did you get my letter?
Oh, yes. You didn't say exactly when you were arriving.
Didn't I?
Oh, never mind. It's delightful to see you. Do sit down.
Thank you.
You're looking awfully well.
So are you, Clarissa.
Oh, nonsense. I've lost weight.
Well, it suits you.
Thank you. When did you get back?
I landed last night. What are you doing with that green shiny thing?
This green shiny thing, as you put it, is my dress for tonight. I've nearly finished mending it.
Oh. How is the Admirable Richard?
The very Admirable Richard is very well.
Does he approve of the hall being demolished?
It's not being demolished. You exaggerate as usual, Peter. The hall has been cleared for my party tonight. But you will come, won't you?
I wouldn't miss it for the world. I gather Sally Seaton will be there. I had a note from her.
You mean, of course, Lady Rossiter, now living in an enormous mansion in Manchester. What brings you back to London, Peter?
I've come to see solicitors Mrs. Hooper and Greatley. Lincoln's Inn.
Oh.
Do you know them?
No. Why are you seeing them?
Oh, Clarissa, I have a million things to tell you. The most important is that I'm in love with a girl in India, a married woman, unfortunately, the wife of a major in the Indian Army. She has two small children, a boy and a girl. The photograph doesn't really do Daisy justice. I've come over to see my lawyers about the divorce.
The children look lovely. But the wife of an army major? Really, Peter? Isn't that a little foolish?
Of course it's foolish. I know what I'm up against.
Oh. Peter, dear, come here.
Oh. It is so good to hold you again. I wish you'd married me instead of Richard. But then, we would have argued all the time, wouldn't we?
Yes. And then made up and held hands again. Oh, well. All that is over for me now. I'm a pale woman up in a tower, leaving real lovers blackberrying in the sun.
Daisy looks so ordinary beside you, Clarissa. Do you remember how you made the moon rise on the terrace at Boughton?
I didn't make the moon rise. Anyway, you hated the moon. You preferred darkness and shadows and talking about the death of the soul. Whenever I think of you, I think mostly of our quarrels. Now, why is that?
Attraction, I should think.
I really did want your good opinion so much. You taught me the meaning of two very important words, sentimental and civilized. Perhaps I'm being sentimental thinking of the past.
I don't know whether it's sentimental thinking of the past. Do you remember that last awful summer at Boughton?
Yes, do you remember the lake? We used to throw bread to the ducks. I suppose that's not enough for a marriage.
Well, you married your Richard. My life has been a failure.
Oh, nonsense. Tell me about India. Adventures. Bridge parties. Love affairs.
Not much of any of those. It's been mainly work. I invented a plough in my district and ordered wheelbarrows from England. The men refused to use them because they were unfamiliar. That was a failure too. Are you happy, Clarissa?
Now, Mr. Warren Smith, how are you today?
Very well, thank you. Except that my wife has taken off her wedding ring. She's lost it.
My hand has grown quite thin. The ring was slipping off, so I put it in my bag. Look, Septimus, it's here. I haven't lost it.
My wife has thrown away her wedding ring. My wife has left me.
No. She has the ring. She's taken it off for safekeeping.
I, Septimus, the Lord of all men, am free to talk to you, Dr. Holmes. I am called forth to hear the truth, to learn the meaning of all the toils of civilization. Romans, Shakespeare, Darwin.
You're a philosopher, Mr. Warren Smith?
The truth must be given.
But to whom is the truth to be given?
To you, to the Prime Minister, to anyone who will listen.
And what exactly will you tell the Prime Minister, Mr. Warren Smith?
I will tell him that the trees are alive and that there is no crime. There is only love, universal love. I will tell him that I have seen a dog turn into a man.
Was the dog standing on its hind legs?
I don't remember. But then it trotted away. Sure. It was only snuffling my trousers.
Good.
I know that heaven is divinely merciful, infinitely benign. But what, Doctor, is the scientific explanation for the fact that I can see through bodies? See into the future and notice when dogs become men.
Well, it may be the heat wave, sir. And you must remember that you have been through a very difficult, traumatic experience. The war has affected so many people this way.
My husband isn't sleeping.
The trouble is that when I sleep, I dream.
He has headaches. He is full of fears.
These are only nervous symptoms, nothing more.
I suppose you are saying that, scientifically speaking, the flesh has melted off the world.
It may feel like that now, but it will heal. You will heal. I'm quite certain of it.
So I am all nerve fibres spread like a veil upon a rock. Well, you know, that makes me feel a lot better. I am lying high on the back of the world. The earth thrills beneath me. Red flowers grow through my body. I can hear their leaves rustling.
I don't understand why he says these things. What am I to do, Dr. Holmes?
Well, if my spirits are a little low, I ask my wife for another plate of porridge at breakfast. Do you cook porridge, Mrs. Warren Smith?
No, but I can learn.
Mm-hmm. Health is largely a matter in our own control. Now, your husband should take up a hobby.
He used to love Shakespeare, didn't you, Septimus?
Oh, no. Shakespeare is not the cure for someone who's out of sorts. Now, I work as hard as any man in London. And I owe my health to the fact that I can always switch off from my patients onto restoring old furniture. There's nothing the matter with him, you know. Nothing really seriously the matter. So perhaps you could think about writing poetry or a novel, perhaps.
I know.
You see, Mrs. Warren Smith, there's nothing wrong with him, really. He's quite a special man. I know it must be very worrying for you. Now, sometimes, Mr. Warren Smith, you must not hurry so much. Wait for your wife to catch up with you.
You see, Doctor, I leaned over the edge of the boat and fell down. I went under the sea. I have been dead, and now I am alive. A drowned sailor on a rock. I am still high on my rock.
Well, you should get down from the rock, sir.
Yes. Yes, you're right. I should get down.
Come to the window. What do you see?
Long streamers of sunlight. Birds swooping and swerving, always with perfect control, as if held by elastic. Flies rising and falling.
See, that is wonderful. It is poetry. You should concentrate on everyday, ordinary things now. The war is over.
The dead are still waiting.
It makes me so unhappy, Dr. Holmes.
You fear the death of the soul, Retzia. Fear no more the heat of the sun. That's Shakespeare.
Go to a music hall. Play cricket. It's a nice out-of-doors game.
You like cricket, don't you, Septimus?
Evans liked cricket. He was killed in Italy just before the armistice. It was remarkable. At the time when it happened, I felt very little. I was proud of feeling very little. The war taught me everything, you see. It was sublime. I went through the whole show. Friendship, death, promotion. I was charmed. The shells missed me. I watched them explode with indifference.
What happened after the war?
I was in Milan. I was billeted in the house of an innkeeper.
My father.
There was a courtyard, flowers in tubs, daughters making hats. Lucrezia was making a hat.
Well, I will say it again. There really is nothing seriously wrong with you, Mr. Warren Smith.
Please listen to Dr. Holmes, Septimus.
I suggest you try 2 tabloids of bromide dissolved in a glass of water at bedtime.
I didn't care when Evans was killed. That is the worst crime. I have committed a sin for which human nature has condemned me to death. I married my wife without loving her.
That isn't true.
What if I still want to kill myself?
Dr. Holmes, should we see another doctor? Get a second opinion?
Well, if you're rich people, then by all means, go to Harley Street. Well, thank you for coming to see me. I will drop in to visit you, Mrs. Warren Smith, to see how you're getting on.
Seriously, Clarissa, are you happy?
Of course I am. You shall see when you come to my party.
I suppose you spend all your time giving and running to parties.
Why must you always make me feel frivolous? Empty-minded, a silly chatterbox. Why is that, Peter?
You know, there's nothing in the world so bad for some women as marriage, politics, and having a conservative husband like Richard.
Mother, you will never guess. Oh, excuse me. I didn't know you had a visitor.
Elizabeth, my darling, do you remember Peter Walsh?
Why, of course I do. Hello. How are you?
Hello, Elizabeth. Good to see you again.
Lucy has found my green jacket.
I knew she would.
I must go. Will you excuse me? I'm sure you're frightfully busy.
Would you like to stay to lunch? I'm afraid Richard has another engagement.
No, thank you.
Then we'll look forward to seeing you tonight.
Goodbye, Clarissa. Elizabeth.
What a strange man.
Why does he look so sad? What on earth did you say to him?
Nothing, my dear. That is Peter Walsh all over. Everything is the matter with him. I shall rest for a little while after lunch.
A great brush smooths my mind, sweeping away children's voices, the shuffle of feet and people passing, the hum and rise and fall of the traffic. I have seen Clarissa again. India is behind me now.
Richard! I say! Richard! Jewel! Nice flowers. What are they?
Carnations, I'm told. Can't tell one flower from another. I hope Millicent likes them.
Shall we?
Good day, gentlemen. Do come in. Lady Bruton is expecting you.
The estimable Miss Brush. How are you?
Very well, Mr. Whitbread. Lovely carnations. I'll put them in water. May I take your coats?
Thank you.
Thank you.
How is your brother, Miss Brush? South Africa, isn't it?
Thank you. He's doing very well. Lady Bruton is in the drawing room.
Peter Walsh. A little older, a little thinner, but still Peter. This question of love and marriage.
Clarissa!
Are they the same?
Come and dance with me.
Love to you, Peter.
What were we all doing at Boughton?
I say, who's that girl over there in the corner?
That, my dear, is Sally Seaton.
I do admire that kind of beauty. Dark, large-eyed. She's everything I am not.
She's rather strange. Her parents don't get on at all.
Really? How very shocking that one's parents should quarrel. But do introduce me. She looks most un-English.
Sally! I say, Sally, come and meet Clarissa. She says you look un-English.
Oh, but how clever. I do have French blood in my veins.
A lucky guess.
One of my ancestors knew Marie Antoinette. He had his head cut off.
How gruesome.
Not at all. Quite glamorous, actually. He left a ruby ring somewhere in the family. Or pawned, I don't know.
No.
Come to my room tonight. I'll tell you the whole story.
How are you, Lady Bruton?
Oh, carnations. Would you, Miss Brush?
Of course.
Delighted you could get up to town, Hugh.
Well, Evelyn, you know.
Indeed, yes. Miss Brush will be joining us for luncheon. Marvellous secretary, otherwise deficient in every attribute of female charm. I need you both to help me write a letter. We'll eat first.
I'm starving. Let's have egg and chips.
What a good idea.
I really think things are going to be all right. We'll still keep our appointment with Sir William Bradshaw this afternoon. Between the two doctors, they will cure you completely.
Retzia, I am the happiest man in the world.
Can I take your order now? We'll have scrambled eggs on toast, some chips, and a big pot of tea. Mm. Thank you, madam. How old were you when you first came to London, Septimus?
Quite young, I think. I left home because my mother shouted at me when I came down to tea without washing my hands. There was no future for a poet in Stroud. I gave my sister a note for my mother and got on the train. One day, someone will read that note and remember how the great man lives.
That was very brave.
I rented a room not far from here, off the Euston Road. I went to classes in the evening. I wanted to improve myself. Miss Isabel Pole lectured in Waterloo Road upon Shakespeare. I fell in love with Miss Isabel Pole. She lent me a copy of Antony and Cleopatra.
Why haven't you told me this before?
Miss Pole lit in me a fire such as burns only once in a lifetime. Without heat, a red-gold flame. Infinitely ethereal and insubstantial. I wrote poems to her.
How wonderful.
One day I will write poems to you too.
You did once write me a poem, Septimus.
Did I?
Yes, but you tore it up before you read it to me.
I sent Miss Pole my poems and she corrected them in red ink.
I wouldn't correct your poems.
One evening I saw her walking in a green dress with a man in a square. I wrote three poems to her that night and tore them all up in the morning. I walked in the streets and went into churches and fasted all the next day. I read Shakespeare, Darwin and Bernard Shaw. When the war broke out, I was one of the first to volunteer.
Because you cared about your country?
No. I went to France to save an England which consisted almost entirely of Shakespeare's plays and Miss Isabel Pole in a green dress walking in a square.
Here we are. Thank you.
Thank you. In the trenches, I drew the attention and affection of my officer, Evans.
Yes.
We were like two dogs on a hearth rug, playing, jumping, the younger dog snapping at the older dog's ears. The older dog lying, somnolent, blinking at the fire, raising a paw, turning and growling good-temperedly. We were together. We had to be together. We fought with each other. We quarrelled with each other.
That is a poem in itself.
And then...
Yes?
I can't feel anything, Retzia.
And then the war was over.
Yes. The dreadful war was over. The truce was signed. One day in Italy, I came into the room where girls were working, making hats, in an innkeeper's house, your father's house.
We saw you, all the sisters, we giggled. You were so handsome.
You were turning buckram shapes this way and that, threading coloured beads on wires. You had saucers full of coloured beads.
Feathers, spangles, silks, ribbons.
Scissors on the table, girls laughing.
I miss my family.
Lamplight, you smiling, your little artist's fingers. Silk feathers all alive in your hands. Retzia. Lucrezia, will you marry me?
Oh, Septimus. It is such a silly dream being unhappy. We will have children. Mm. We shall go to the Tower of London, to the Victoria and Albert Museum and Hampton Court. We shall read Shakespeare together.
And Dante and Aeschylus. I do love you, Lucrezia.
A delicious lunch, Lady Bruton.
Thank you. And how is dear Clarissa?
Very well indeed.
Quite recovered from her illness?
Oh, yes.
Good. Miss Brush, you have your notebook.
Of course, Lady Bruton.
You may already know something of my new project. It is an idea for respectable young people of both sexes to emigrate and settle with the prospect of doing well in Canada.
Do you really think this is the best solution to our employment problem? I'm not certain that emigration is the obvious remedy.
I've given it a great deal of consideration. For me, it's a cause worth pursuing, and I have become closely identified with it.
Of course.
I have begun a letter to the Times newspaper on numerous occasions. I have torn it up and begun again and torn it up again. Miss Brush will vouch for that.
Oh, yes.
Hugh, you possess, no one can doubt it, the art of writing letters to the Times.
You flatter me, Lady Bruton.
You have such a command of language. You can put things as editors like them to be put. If you, Richard, advise me and Hugh writes for me, I'm sure of getting it right. I already have a selection of choice phrases to use. We are of the opinion that the times are ripe. Something about the superfluous youth of our ever-increasing population. Mm. A phrase about what we owe to the dead. That sort of thing.
Yes, yes, all worthy of consideration.
Miss Brush.
Here, Lady Bruton.
These are my notes and drafts. I am in your hands.
I shall be honoured to help, Lady Bruton.
I can let you have something tomorrow.
You will come up with a masterpiece, I am sure. I don't know what I should do without you both. I have the most unreliable family in the world, you know.
I think it's hugely exciting. Mine is so dull, so ordinary.
So reassuring. Actually, I've run away from home.
How romantic.
Not really, I haven't a penny.
What happened?
Oh, there was the most awful quarrel at home. I couldn't bear it anymore. Can I stay here?
Oh, of course you can. We've plenty of space.
It's frightfully rude of me.
It's a pleasure to have you here. You're great fun, you know.
I had to pawn a pearl brooch to come down. I rushed off in such a passion. Oh, I nearly forgot. I brought you a book. It's William Morris. I love William Morris. I mean to found a society to abolish private property. Will you join?
I don't know.
I want to reform the world. Have you read Plato? I can read him all day. Clarissa, you are so kind. Come here.
Oh, Sally.
A soft kiss, full on the lips.
Thank you, Clarissa.
Sally Seton.
For everything.
A match burning in a crocus. It was the most exquisite moment of my whole life. I was given a present, not something to look at like a diamond, but something infinitely more precious. An inner meaning almost expressed. Was I in love with Sally? Am I still in love with Sally? Perhaps I felt what men feel. It is over. It was just a moment. Everything must end. Everything must die.
I'm sorry, Richard. Do you mind?
Hmm?
Evelyn might like that necklace. Shall we go in?
If you like. I could buy something for Clarissa.
Is it Clarissa's birthday?
No. You know, I never give Clarissa a present. Except a bracelet last year. She never wears it.
Ah, good day, Mr. Whipred.
Du Bonnet, you have a necklace in the window. May I see it?
Certainly, sir.
And I would like to see some brooches, perhaps with a stone or two?
Certainly, sir. I will bring you a selection. Excuse me.
Always a good thing, jewellery. Oh, Lord. You have to write that letter for Millicent by tomorrow.
Frankly, I don't care a straw what becomes of emigration.
No.
But one must keep in with Millicent. She is so very influential.
Indeed.
How is your Elizabeth these days?
Oh, I adore Elizabeth. If I'd had a boy, I would have said, work, work. But I don't mind what Elizabeth does with her life. By the way, did you know that Peter Walsh has come back from India?
Has he really?
Mm.
He can't have been a success there. Otherwise, why come back? Wasn't he rather sweet on Clarissa?
Yes. Such a bore.
Here we are, gentlemen.
Oh, this is impossible. Hugh, help me decide.
I haven't a clue, my dear chap.
Well, this one is tasteful, sir. The brooch has a rather fine single ruby. It can be worn with anything.
Mm-hmm. After 35 years, you can trust Mr. Dubonnet's judgment.
Mm.
And for Mrs. Whitbread, simplicity is best, I always think.
Yes. Good. Thank you so much.
Excuse me, gentlemen.
How do you think Clarissa will take it? Seeing Peter Walsh again.
No idea, old chap. We've not spoken of him for years until this morning. Probably a mistake.
After not speaking and not speaking, the time comes when it is hard to say anything at all.
Buy her a bunch of roses, old chap. Jewellery and roses. That's what women really like.
Was I really jealous of Peter Walsh and Clarissa? It's a miracle, thinking of the war and thousands of poor chaps already half forgotten. It's a miracle that I was lucky enough to marry Clarissa. Perhaps I don't tell her enough that I love her. Partly one's lazy, partly one's just shy. I shall buy Clarissa some flowers and tell her that I love her. The wind is getting up. In Norfolk, a soft, warm wind blows back the petals, confuses the waters, ruffles the grasses. Haymakers have pitched beneath hedges to sleep away the morning toil. They move globes of cow parsley to see the blue, steadfast, blazing summer sky. I wish I were in Norfolk now. I will go home and tell Clarissa that I love her.
In part one of Mrs. Dalloway by Virginia Woolf, Mrs. Dalloway was played by Fenella Woolgar, Richard by Sam Dale, Septimus by Paul Reddy, and Retzia by Susie Riddell. Peter was Scott Handy, Sally Liza Sadovy, Elizabeth Emerald O'Hanrahan, Lucy Amaka Okafor, Hugh Patrick Brennan, Dr. Holmes Peter Hamilton Dyer, Miss Brush, Christine Absalom, and Miss Pym was Tracy Wiles. Mrs. Dalloway was dramatised by Micheline Wondor, and the director was Mark Beebe.
And the final part of Mrs. Dalloway is at the same time next week here on Radio 4. After the news in a couple of minutes, open book.
If Greece leaves the euro, what happens to its banks, borders, social stability? And what about the rest of the eurozone? Could the whole single currency be in jeopardy? I'm Chris Bowlby, and in February I made a programme setting out the scenarios. More hypothetical then, highly possible now. So listen to Analysis, Preparing for Eurogeddon, this evening at 9:30.